This is the Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City. Good news in shoes.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA, and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Martech program, Joe Martech.
So this is Joe Martech, and Joe Martech's a financial advisor, and Vince Rizzino, CPA, is here today, and Pastor Dave is moderating. So Pastor Dave, what's a mutual fund?
Oh boy.
Well, you ask me this every time. By now, I should know.
Is it still a pizza?
It's still a pizza.
Yeah. And we also have guest attorney Alan Love here today. And Mike Paulus probably just ran out and went potty, and he's coming back. So
I had a customer on the phone.
Well, you know, listen, some things, you're looking more like Victoria every day.
Oh! Well, I'll take that as a compliment then.
Well, the reason I say Ms. Victoria.
It has to be better than I was.
Ms. Victoria Lloyd Remax of Stewart is a worker bee. I mean, that girl, I don't think anybody. Combined, we can take this room and we don't work as hard as she does. She just is constantly working, so. Today we have Mike Paulus, mortgage broker, Vince Rizzino, CPA, Joe Martech, financial advisor. Other members of the group that are not here are Greg Fasula, attorney, and Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, and Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart. Concept of the show is very simple. Back in around 2004, we started doing these shows with the concept of helping people answer questions that we kind of take for granted, that we are educated in, Vince became a CPA and went to school forever, taught at a university level, is a forensic CPA, which gives him lots and lots of credibility and experience, because you're old, Vince.
Yeah, but not as old as you.
That's what really upsets me. Wait, it'd serve everybody right if I dropped dead right now.
No, then
you'd be the oldest guy in the room.
That's right. I don't know. No, actually, it would be Alan right here. He'd be the oldest.
Alan, would you sneak out real quick in case I die fast?
Hello, Joe.
You're not going to get off that easy.
It's not that easy. I've got to stay alive at least till the end of the show, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So the concept of the show is to help people, and we've been very blessed. Our group has, and we've been able to help quite a few people. We try to answer questions, and this is a talk show. You can call in 1-888-221-8990. That's toll-free from every place. And remember this, we got Mike Paulus, mortgage broker. The mortgage business, we say it every week, it's unbelievable that interest rates are still hovering around 4%. I mean, it's just a miracle that it's
gone
this long.
Yeah, and you know, that's even in light of the Fed raising the rates every couple of months now.
And they've still stayed low.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
Vince Rizzino, CPA, he's got a battle and a half coming this next year as tax reform or tax change or whatever happens, if it happens.
Yeah. It's tax reform.
If it happens. Yeah.
It's going to be a big battle in the Congress.
Oh, man.
There's so much controversy in there.
Big time. You know, and always, we were just talking about it before the show had, there's always three sides to every story. If we take the conservative side as one side, the liberal side is another side, and then somewhere in the middle, if we can find a person that is not swayed by either side, that is objective, which is very hard to find, to come up with a real, just take the whole plan and say, how does it work out for the average American from this standpoint, from that standpoint? Because we all know this, Vince, the argument is the rich are going to get real healthy under this plan.
Yes.
And the poor probably are going to do pretty good. Yep. Somebody's got to pay the tariff on this thing, right?
Well, it's
unless they just keep increasing the deficit, which is a possibility.
Which is another possibility, which kind of irks all of us. That
anybody who's got a financial head knows you can't keep spending without bringing in the revenue.
One of these days, you've got to pay
the bill. I think the whole concept, though, is if you can stimulate the economy and you can get growth up to 4%, then you can grow your way out of
that. If you look at empirical evidence, it's never happened. Trickle-down doesn't happen. It doesn't generate as much in new business or new taxes as you
Well, just up. If you look at how the economy has been forming just with the threat of this change. I mean, the stock market's up 20% since the beginning of this year. And this is all because they're anticipating this to go through.
Not in quantitative easing. That didn't hurt.
But let's ask another. Bring up another thing. You remember Bill Clinton?
Not since this year, though.
You remember that guy named Bill Clinton?
I remember him.
Yeah, he was a president for a while.
He was 8 years.
You know, that's when they renamed Hope Sound Clinton Falls. You know.
No.
Oh yeah. Clinton you don't Falls. Remember that part?
No. that was Hope Sound, but it was more Jupiter Island. Though.
I know. Yeah, he was. But the mailing address is Hope, same zip code.
Yes.
Anyway, Clinton was visiting Greg Norman down there. For folks that don't know, and he fell and he broke his leg or something, so we renamed Hope Sound.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, that was why we renamed it Clinton Falls. Anyway, little pun intended. Yeah. But
I missed that.
I guess the concept we were looking at under Bill Clinton, we had full employment, and we actually, in theory, we're a break-even economy, dollar in, dollar out. Remember that?
In theory.
And it worked on paper, but it didn't work in reality. But their bottom line was that's the closest we got, and back again. And it worked on paper, but it didn't work in employment rate down at 4% or lower. In theory, that's considered full employment.
But you know,
again, and it worked on paper, but it didn't.
It's not a very accurate measure
of
employment.
Of who's really.
Yeah, because the participation rate is a more important statistic.
Yeah, but even that has improved.
It's improved, recently. But it's still way. I mean, if you look at the number of people who aren't working, add that to the current unemployed, you're probably around 10 or 12%.
Yeah, but I think if people were looking for a job for 2 years and they can't find a job for 2 years, they're not trying very hard.
Wait, yeah, but they disappear off the rolls.
But here comes. Yeah, that's
so
right. They don't count them.
Right.
And rightfully so.
Let me ask you a question.
I don't know about that.
You know, other than Alan here, who's independently wealthy, you know, because attorneys are that way.
They are.
Could you go 2 years without getting paid?
No.
I mean, no.
Exactly. So What are they doing for earnings?
Well, they're taking.
They might be taking other benefits.
They could be
somewhere.
Taking right. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. So right. How does that help?
Well, it keeps money moving in the system. They just don't pay tax on it.
Yeah. Exactly. Thank you.
You're welcome. But the money moves in the system, which
it moves. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
I just don't think we should be overly concerned with people that haven't. You know, settled on a job. If you're a CPA and a CPA job isn't available and you've gone unemployed for 2 years, then maybe you should work at Home Depot.
Wait. I might be working at Home Depot and not waiting 2 years to go there.
First
I can afford to wait
right.
2 years.
So,
get a
first
job.
You know, the truth is not.
Vince, do you know what a hammer looks like?
Yes, I do. I even know what a screwdriver looks like. I've done a few of those repairs over the years.
1-888-221-8990. We had a couple of conversations this morning that we'll probably get into again. But, Alan, did you have an observation, a quirk?
I have a pop quiz for all of you.
Here we go.
Oh, there you go. Who's serving the pop?
1 year ago, President Donald Trump was elected.
True.
How much did the stock market go up based on the Dow Jones Industrial Average in the 1 year?
I know the answer. You know the answer?
Well, I think I heard today from the beginning of this year.
From November 8th.
No, that I don't know.
I
but
it's
20%,
and now it's 23.
How about 30?
30%?
No, it wasn't quite that. It was 23.8.
Yeah, I was going to say 25%.
Well, you know what I was doing? I was doing the NASDAQ is up 30.
Yes, the NASDAQ is up 30.
I didn't use the Dow. But that was a sneaky question.
The second question is, what was the best performing stock market in the world from November 8th through today?
The best
was it
market.
The United States?
No.
Any guess?
No, you're supposed China. To give us. You're supposed to give us four choices.
All right, I'll give you four choices. I
guess the United States is
choice
one.
Number one, Germany. Choice number two, Israel. Choice number three, Brazil. Choice number four, Italy.
Wow. Yeah. Given those four choices, you know what? I'd go with Germany.
I'd go with Italy.
I'm going to take
Mr.
Israel.
Mr. Martek is correct.
And Italy, Italy bottomed. I mean, bottom. They were down to Zippo. So it was so easy to come up 50% because 50% of a dollar is only $1.50.
It didn't hurt that I vacationed there this summer.
No, it didn't hurt. Yeah. Mike, why it went up was because Mike spent so much money there.
Italy was up an astounding 48%, wow. Double what we did. And Vince, you had the number two country, Germany, 34%. Israel was up 31%. Brazil was down. They got hurt bad this year.
The key thing, I think, if you look at when the numbers, if you looked at where they started from on that date compared to, like, Germany never has taken a monster hit down like other countries. Like, Italy took a monster hit down. I don't know what Israel took, but I know that Italy, Greece, the pigs, Portugal, yep. Italy, Greece, and Spain all took monster hits. These acronyms we've come up with in the last year, you know, and the other ones, the FANGs. Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google.
Yeah,
and thanks. What's this S? Yes. Anyway, it is what it is.
It wasn't Snapchat.
Snapchat.
It wasn't Snapchat.
Took a hit today.
Oh,
they took a hit. They came back. They took a hit. They kind of hovering again.
Yeah. Well, their earnings came out yesterday, and it wasn't so great.
Disappointing.
Yes.
To me, the most astounding stock story of the past couple of years
is Bitcoin.
Was when Oprah Winfrey took a position in Weight Watchers. Weight Watchers was up over 200% since first of the year.
Shows you the power of Oprah. You know, she's
just
probably got one of the biggest fan bases of anybody on earth. You know, people really, really admire that woman. But hey, rightly so. She's done.
So celebrity can definitely influence the price of stock.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing to do with fundamentals.
Nothing to do with fundamentals, yep. 1-888-221-8990. I want to talk about a subject that came up today. If you've got something to interject on magic mortgages today.
Magic mortgages.
I mean, I hear Rocket Mortgage, and I hear all these things. I figure maybe Mike should have Magic Mortgage.
Well, we do have a magic wand in the office that we use occasionally.
Does it work?
I don't know.
I like that pause. It's like a crystal ball. Joe, look into your crystal ball.
That was a pregnant
my
pause.
Crystal
He's
ball
got an answer coming.
Years ago.
I think it's run out of magic quite a few years ago.
Well, what happened is I have a client of mine that I went to see this morning, and they're a retired couple, and they've got extended family, and they had some problems with some of the extended family, and they wanted to make some changes on beneficiaries.
Okay.
So we made beneficiary changes. One was to an existing annuity contract. They wanted to split the money 50-50 between two of the kids or grandkids. Well, they then came back and said, well, one of the kids has already collected quite a bit of it, so we had to change the percentage, which you can do. So if you have an annuity contract or anything where you can name beneficiaries, you don't need to name them equally. You can name by percentage, 10%, 20%, 50%, whatever it is, you can go that. Second one was more emotional. They have an 11-year-old granddaughter who was being raised in a very dysfunctional home, and meaning drugs and who knows what. It's just a big problem. And the child is an excellent child. And probably, and we talked about this, and Vince and all of us here, I think I've seen it, and a lot of families out there have lived through it. Sometimes really good kids come out of extremely dysfunctional homes because they see so much dysfunction that they're scared of it. Like when it comes to alcohol or drugs or whatever it might be, they see that and they get really turned off if they have some good guidance when they're very young. Well, so this child is an angel to grandma, and she wants to put money into a trust, or not in a trust, she wanted to have money set aside for this granddaughter. She's got an existing trust And I said, well, the easy way to do this, you go to the attorney that did it, and you're going to do a amendment to the trust strictly for that granddaughter. Now, what I like was the good part about it. He's got a really good pension, her husband, and she's got money of her own that's in either an IRS or other savings. She's not worried if he dies first. She's worried if she dies first. Because if she dies first, he's got plenty of money and a pension, and he and I were deciding what new truck we'd get if she died first. We were looking at that $75,000
Raptor. So why doesn't she just give away her assets?
So right away she said, that's exactly, I don't trust you guys. You know?
Of course.
She said, I want to put money. And I said, how do you suggest I do it? And I said, well, there's lots of ways to think about it. But, and Greg was there today and we were doing, and I said, I run into this circumstance quite often. And normally what I say is, you pick a firm dollar amount. I don't care how much it is, 5, 10, 20,000, pick a number. And that child is not going to get that money until they're 18 or older. And normally you earmark it for health, welfare, and education. But I added one caveat. And I said, they have successor trustees. When you have a trust, you are the trustee when you're alive. When you die, you have what's called a successor trustee that's now in charge of this money. And that successor trustee is supposed to do exactly what it says in the trust. Buy, sell, manage, do whatever it says, and who gets the money and how they get it. I said, well, in the trust, I normally would like to see the successor trustees have discretion. In other words, let them do what they think is right for that child. Mm. Now, I know there comes an opinion. What happens is, and the successor trustees are my clients, two adult children when they're not young. And because what can happen, health, education, welfare, specifics, well, what if this young girl happens to get married at 16 or 17, goes through two divorces and starts flying right at 22 or 23 or some, pick an age, pick a time. To make specifics too specific, circumstances can get in the way and change, just like if you were alive and it was your child and your child was in trouble then got better again. Maybe if you were dead, you would have put something down that wouldn't apply when you're alive. So the other side of the coin was, and I said, as long as you're alive, when it comes to setting up this trust, you can always change it. So anyway, it becomes a situation that I said, what you have to do before you go to the attorney is think this thing through, write it down, because the memory factor is not good. And some attorneys are not going to ply your imagination as much as they should. Greg is pretty good at dragging information out of people to make them think before he writes it down, so they can actually accomplish what they want. So it was just a new subject that, you know, that I've not talked about, how people can establish a trust and accomplish their goal, but leave some wiggle room, just as if you were still alive. You might change your mind on what you would do based on circumstances. And if you trust your successor trustee, which normally...
Well, yes, of course, that's why they're called trustees. They're fiduciaries. But the thing is, once you give it, my opinion, once you give that authority, if you will, that wiggle room, it adds another layer of complexity to the whole thing.
It does.
And
But here comes the key. There's nobody to answer to. They get to do really whatever they want.
Now, I hope they have good insurance.
Well, meaning why?
If they make the wrong decision,
well,
and the child sues.
Give me an example.
Now, what if he withholds because he thinks she's a druggie and is going to use the money for drugs?
But if it's
how can you prove it? Number one, if it's against the trust itself,
well, then there you go. But if the trust gives them discretion, in other words, it's up to them totally. The way it's phrased is the important part, which you're just saying right there.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not phrased correctly, there could be some legal liability.
Right.
So.
And I think it opens up a whole new...
If you give them too much discretion, can they allocate those funds elsewhere?
Here's the key with this. The money has to be used for the health, welfare, or education of that child.
Well, that's pretty broad terms.
Welfare could be if she is a drug addict.
Well, and it could be. It could be for a drug...
Maybe you got to help her or him for that.
Well, let's just say it was your kid and they were a druggie and you put him in a rehab and the rehab cost $6,000, let's just say. What do you do? You know, okay, you don't have it, go live under a bridge, and if you die, you die. We try to rehab somebody, right? I mean, people do all the time. Does it work? Not often. But the point is,
I would rather put a more elaborate trust document together that captures some of these possibilities on what the trustee needs to do.
And they can. Yeah. So what I suggested was this. I'm not telling them what to put down. I'm planting a seed. Let them talk to the attorney and let him draft what might be comprehensive enough to accomplish their goal. Anyway, it's not easy. But when you have these circumstances where you're trying to do the right thing, hey, when you're alive, it's your money. You make any decision you want. But now you're gone, and you want to rule from the grave. Yep. And you want the successor trustee to think like you're thinking.
All right.
Not the easiest thing.
No, but you could probably put some kind of discretion as far as the time frame. They can deviate from that trust plan for a period of time.
And literally, normally you put a time frame in there that says when that child reaches X age, whatever money's left, they get. You got to stop it at some point. You can't let it go out infinitum because they die, and there's what are you going to do with the money then? So normally, and we were talking about that, and I said normally when I talk to people, I use two numbers, 25 and 30. You know, if a person, and I'm not saying, you know, Mike, when you were 30, were you fully mature?
No.
Okay.
I'm not so sure I am right now.
You know, men, we get to 14 and hover for years.
Decades.
16. Decades, right. 16 for you. You were a late bloomer, right?
I was a late bloomer. 16. Still 16.
Anyway, it's not the easiest thing to do. And when I counsel, I'm not telling anybody what to do. I'm trying to open up their thinking process. So when they talk to the attorney, his job is to really try to help them think even more. But if you walk in there without any idea what to say and what to prod the attorney with, it makes it tougher.
Oh, definitely.
Yep.
But I think they could construct a document to accomplish what you want to accomplish.
Of course.
As opposed to giving it the discretion to the trustee.
Well, that's your opinion.
No, that's my opinion anyway.
I know. But, you know, hey, that's why we have a yin and a yang.
Yeah. So we have soup and pasta.
Steak and chicken.
There you go. No, steak and chicken, they're both meat.
Wait a minute.
You know.
Potato pancakes and broccoli.
Oh.
It's quite a dinner, right?
Oh,
where are we going with this?
My appetite. As long as I've got sour cream and
butter, I might help.
Oh my!
1-888-221-8990. Remember, we got Vince Rosino, CPA.
You want to talk about taxes someday?
Let's talk about that. Oh. This is.
Go ahead.
Talk about taxes.
Oh, you want PA? You want to talk about taxes someday?
Let's
came out with their bill this past week,
right?
And the jury's out as to
what PA
from this. There are a lot of provisions, but I think it's one of those situations where it's a give to the people and it's a take back from the people. I'm talking about middle class now, because most of the deductions are going to be eliminated that we know of, most except for mortgage interest will still be there
up to
$500,000
value
of mortgage
for your mortgage. Interest on a $500,000.
Charitable deductions will still be there,
okay.
So you'll get that. But things like disaster losses won't be there, unless, of course, it's a case where there's a FEMA disaster declaration or something.
Then if FEMA comes in, it's a different story.
It's a different story, but most casualty losses would go away. All medical deductions would go away.
Boy, I talk about Dan today paying $3,400 a month for health insurance. Wouldn't he be thrilled?
Mm. Well, that's a different story, because that would fall under another section of the code on the business side, as opposed to
if it's a benefit paid by the business, then it still becomes a deduction.
It would become a deduction.
Yeah, but now he's got to pay health insurance for everybody. I mean, you know, it gets more complicated normally.
Well,
right?
If they're employees, yes. Yeah. Then there's a question.
Let me take this phone call. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Yes, I have a quick question about this is about taxes. And it has to be if my girlfriend and I, we live together for the and it has to be the dependent if she doesn't have to file. I know the rule qualifying a relative, you know, if the individual lives with you for the whole year, you know, you can qualify as a dependent, but of course the other test must be met.
Right.
And let's pretend she does. And this is all about that law that I know before Florida it was illegal or criminal
You're going to give us
a lawful relationship.
We're going to announce your name and address here, right?
But I just heard that the governor said that it's okay now, that it's not an unlawful act. So with that being said, and I know the rule, the IRS says, yes, the person, the individual live with you for the whole year, as long as it doesn't violate any local laws, it's okay if that person makes the other test. So
Here comes Vince Rosino. No, you're ready? No. CPA sitting here.
No, that's not quite the way it works. Yes, there is a relationship test, but there's also an income test, and you must provide for more than half of their support to start with.
Right.
There's a relationship test as well.
Now, what's the relationship?
Well, it's got to be a blood relative. It's got to be, I'm sorry. For the most part, it's blood relatives, but it doesn't have to be. I take that back. It doesn't have to be. But
give me the
brother, sister, nephew, niece.
Blood relatives.
If you have that, they're living in your household and you're providing more than half of their support.
His circumstance, it's not a blood relative.
Well, if she's living in his house and he provides more than half of her support,
right?
You've got to demonstrate that.
Right.
Then yes, she could qualify.
If she doesn't, if she's got a low paying, let's say she made $5,000 a year. Let's just use that number, mm-hmm. Vince.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would cost more than $5,000 a year to support somebody. I'm giving you an example.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't he be able to then prove that he's supporting her for more than half?
Well, you got to find out what it is he's providing to her. And is it more than what she's providing for herself? She may have earnings. She may have savings. She may have lots of things that she's using to support herself with or could use to support herself with.
What about, she's a queen. She doesn't do nothing. So I support her 100% just because she's so beautiful. I'm so crazy about her.
That was a pretty good
try. Her job is to look beautiful all day.
I know, that was a really good try at the save. Is she listening to you right now? If she didn't hit you in the back of the head before you said that, you're lucky.
I do hope she's not listening to the program.
Anyway, because she will not be amorous.
Let's go through the test. So, all right, so she lived with me for 12 years. He passed that, all right, because she's living with me. The next one will be income. She has no income at all, so she has no reason to file a return, so she passed that. I'm supporting her, meaning I'm giving her housing, food. I'm giving her
transportation, her bills, everything, right.
I'm giving her transportation,
yeah.
All that good stuff. She's a citizen of the United States.
Okay, that's important.
And the last one will be the joint, but she's not married with anybody else, so she's unmarried. That's great. So the question comes into play is about the unlawful. So because it's okay that she's my girlfriend, will qualify as a dependent if she meets all these tests.
You just put down dependents on there, you don't name the dependents.
Yeah, you do.
Do you?
Yes, you do.
You name
have
it?
To name the
you,
dependent.
You so what, do, right. You, you
what
have
category
to name
do
dependent.
You put down?
What do you mean, what category? They're the dependent.
Living
put
with?
Down, that's live, all they meet all those tests.
But you don't have dependent. To put down niece, nephew.
No. Well, yes, you put the relationship. Absolutely.
Well, I'm trying. What does he put down for relationship?
Right. So if I put that my girlfriend is my girlfriend, and that's the key right there. So if I put down it's my girlfriend, will the IRS look at it? What? Hey, guys, you are living unlawfully.
Vince.
This thing about the governor saying that it's okay now makes it all good.
You better get a letter from the governor.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something.
I
wouldn't use the word. Definitely wouldn't use the word girlfriend. But let me tell you, whatever the governor of Florida says, or any other governor for that matter, has absolutely no impact
on
the federal government.
Right.
The federal's got their own tax laws, their own rules. And they can do whatever they want locally.
So, Vince, get off the top of your head, and I don't want to pin you down, but here I'm pinning you down. What category would you put her into?
I don't know.
Partner?
You know what? Call me in my office tomorrow. I'll go through the rules with you.
Yeah.
And then we can make a determination better than doing this on the air.
Are you sitting at home right now?
No, I'm driving.
Okay, well, then never mind. We took your name and number. Vince will call you tomorrow. Is that okay? And let him.
That sounds great.
Let's go through the regs, yeah. And
because that I think would raise a flag. I'll talk to you about it more tomorrow.
I'll give you a category, another one that's not a good one. It's called one of my girlfriends.
Oh boy.
Guys, thank you very much. Okay. I appreciate it. I'll see you then tomorrow, okay?
Talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah, what Alan said, right, I mean, bye-bye. Domestic partner would probably be the appropriate
domestic term. Domestic partner.
Yeah, probably yes. domestic yeah. partner might be more appropriate.
Yeah, once you go through regs, you can look a little more
intelligent. I'll look more into it, but I think that the girlfriend thing...
That's a word that's not a good word.
Yeah, I don't think it's partner. A good word.
Well, now what if you're two gay guys or two gay girls? I mean, forgive me. I'm not trying to be judgmental, but if you put partner, is that a category you think might fly? You'll find out tomorrow.
I'm not giving an illegal opinion here, but to me, a partner connotes the fact that you're living with somebody, that there's a relationship between the two of
right,
you.
Right.
Girlfriend, you can have more than one girlfriend. You know, you
well, that's
have,
what I was telling him. He's got to be careful. Yeah,
got to be careful. But with the when, girlfriend.
I think some of the employment contracts now are written with the phrasing domestic partner. Some of the benefits you get. That phrase is used. So I think at least in the legal community, it has more of an import than a girlfriend or a friend or
I
something
like that.
I think
you hit it right on the
domestic
head, Alan, with in terms of commitment, living in the same house. He's paying her expenses. The mail goes there. This is her residence. I mean, there's a lot of tests that have to
a lot of tests, right.
I mean, but, I assume she has a driver's license with the same residence.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Girlfriend, I mean, you know, yeah. It could be anybody.
This is much more than
a Joe.
Thing.
Look at Joe, right. Yeah.
This is much more than that was last a week. Casual relationship between two people.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a long-term relationship. Why they're not married is not our business. But the key thing is this, and I think you hit it. If it's a partner... That word can encompass a lot of things. I mean, Alan, you and I could be living together, sharing a house, and I could be not working and you're supporting me, right? You should be able to claim me as a dependent, right? Wouldn't that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I think.
Do you have an extra room?
She should probably go to.
I was about ready to ask.
Never mind.
You know.
We'll take care of him tomorrow. I'll speak to him.
1-888-221-8990. 888-221-8990. Well, that was a situation that we talked about earlier today, too. Hmm. The federal rules usually have nothing to do with state rules. The federal government dances to its own drummer.
Actually, it goes the other way around. Usually, the states will follow the Fed rules. And they'll
usually,
do.
But they don't always.
Doesn't always happen. Yeah.
Well, here came another question we brought up today, and Greg Vasula was there. Somebody I know who happens to live in Missouri was put on the deed by her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And the mom put the son, her son, and her daughter on the deed to her house. And I just said, boy, that's usually a mistake. It's definitely a mistake in Florida because it can void your homestead. Homestead means in Florida that if you get sued, they can't take your house away from you. Another big problem is mom dies and the kids get the house, the cost basis, meaning what mom paid for the house, goes back. And if she paid $100,000, now it's worth $300,000, and forget the recapture part. The kids may have a taxable consequence of $200,000, but because they inherited through a will, they inherited at the value mom died, $300,000, and they sell it, and there's no tax.
Right.
So there's two big problems there when you put a child on a deed, and I don't know how many times this comes up, but it comes up quite often, and especially a good mama wants to protect her kids and saying, making sure you get the house, so I'll put you on that deed, and boy, oh boy, what a problem comes back up later.
You're better off taking care of it with a will or with a trust.
Will or trust.
Not only that, if the children get into some kind of financial situation where they have to declare bankruptcy or they have an IRS
that
lien.
House is gone.
Yeah,
that
house is gone.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
If you're the innocent party to that, mm-hmm. you're going to be fucked into it.
Yes. Look at
you could lose your record.
And if it's not a homestead, that lien can be forced. You know, whether
the IRS can take anything.
The IRS can.
They supersede any homestead loan.
Yeah, you're right. The key thing I look at, though, is the two major things. Lawsuit, the kids get sued for whatever. Could be a car accident, could be anything. And the second one is taxes. Why why donate $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 in taxes if you don't have to?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Big situation.
I mean, you could avoid that also with a trust like we were discussing.
And there's two easy ways, a will or a trust.
Mm-hmm.
Both ways can absolutely take care of that. So I don't many
and you'd be surprised how many people don't have one or the other. You should have at least one.
You should have at least one.
But and preferably both.
Well, not necessarily. Like if Greg was sitting here, he would tell you that if you sometimes you don't need. I'll give you another example. I've got truly. Hey, you ready for this?
Well, if everything goes to the other spouse, you probably don't need it. But
here, how about people here? I've got this elderly couple. They're older than me, so they're elderly.
Wow,
I know, it's a miracle, isn't it? They had an A and B trust. Now, folks, an A and B trust means there's his trust and her trust. Years ago, the deduction for not paying estate taxes was like $650,000. So let's say they had $1.5 million. They could split it up between the two trusts. So when one died, the money could go to the other side and they wouldn't have little or no taxes. Well, now the deduction is $5 million or $5.5 million.
5.5, almost 5.5. 5.49.
So you can leave $5.5 million and there's no estate tax to be paid. Now,
it's even better than that, Joe. Whatever they don't use on the spouse that dies will get ported over to the spouse that survives.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I mean, you could have up to $11 million of exemption.
So now, here they are. They don't own a house anymore. They've got a brokerage account with a transfer on death agreement. They've got annuity contracts with beneficiaries named. They have IRAs with beneficiaries named. They don't need anything. Literally, there is nothing to even put into a will and or a trust. Everything that bank accounts, TOD, transfer on death, they don't have one asset except a grandfather clock, which the granddaughter's going to come and sneak out of the house.
What about the house?
They don't own a house. They're living in an assisted living.
Okay, well, in that case, then maybe they don't.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, and I was looking and I'd even talk.
Well, even a house, you own it by tenants by the entirety, so the surviving spouse would automatically get the house.
I'm saying, but with a will, somebody
if they both die, it has to go to somebody. But with a house, but they own no real estate. They own, at this point, nothing.
So it's possible then, yeah.
Yeah.
Then maybe they don't even need that.
Well, that's what I said. Because they were talking to me about, what am I going to do with this trust, Joe? We've got to go to an attorney. And I said, I can't figure out what in the world you need to put into that trust, you know. I hate to say it, that house dress that you're wearing isn't worth that much. But, you know, never mind. Anyway, the key is that there is some reality that sneaks in. Every once in a while, I have seen people be taken advantage of because they don't know the rules, and people put documents together that they don't need. One of the things about Greg Fasulo, when he talks to people, and I admire him to no end when he does this. He says, you don't need this, you don't need that, you don't need to waste your money doing this because what you've got is adequate, or here's how to do it without spending money. And that's one of the things that I do with people. Back again, transfer on death agreements on a bank account. It's a big one, folks. If you don't sure you have one, you walk into the bank and you look at the teller or whoever's there and say, do we have transfer on death on our checking account, savings account, and or CDs? All of them. If you don't, have them do it, and they won't charge you a nickel. They'll do it.
But if we want to get back to the tax law changes, Joe, because it's quite significant. I mean, they're proposing to raise the standard deduction for most people from $12,500 to $24,000, which is substantial.
So if you got husband and wife?
So if it's husband and wife, it'll be $24,000.
Each?
No. $24,000 in total.
Total. What if you have four kids?
We're talking standard deduction now. If personal exemptions go away. That's the flip side.
Oh, really?
The flip side is they'll give you an extra $12,000 theoretically in standard deduction, but then take away the personal exemptions. And they're worth about $4,000 per
child.
Per person.
Per person.
Husband, wife, and children.
So if I had six in the house, six times four is 24.
Guess what?
If I have seven, I just lost
deduction
on $4,000.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So it's not, as I say, on the surface, it sounds very good. They've reduced the rates, yes, but they're taking and giving. And so it comes down to individuals, people, to figure out whether it's going to benefit you or not. But I can tell you right now, it almost looks like a push for most of the middle income people, I think.
Yeah.
Just looking at it.
Where are these, now I understand they're going to change it to four tax brackets.
Right.
Now, where do those tax brackets change? Where do they kick in?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Mike. I'm glad you asked that.
Thankfully, he brought some notes.
Yeah, I brought notes. Okay, well, here's the thing. They're going to be from 25% bracket would start at $45,000, okay?
Meaning under 45?
Under 45,
you'd be... So right now, that's about $150,000, right?
So wait a minute. Under 45 is 12%?
It's 12%.
Where's the first break, though, where you have no tax?
No tax? There's, There is no tax at this point. It's
but you get a $24,000 deduction.
Well, I guess it would be $24,000.
$24,000. Yeah. If you're a husband and wife, if it's one person, it's 12. Or is that true?
No, it's true. It is true.
It's 12,000
for a person.
Max 24, 12 a person, max 24. Okay.
So if you do have $24,000 of income, that would be wiped out.
That'd be nothing. So then after that.
So between 12, I guess, and 45, you're at 12%.
Okay. So the
over 45. And 90 for married couples.
Wait a minute. After the standard deduction, up to $45,000 is a 12% rate?
Yes. It's taxable. It's income minus deductions give you a taxable. Taxable income. And that's the income we're talking about here.
Under $45,000.
Under $45,000 taxable, it's going to be at 12%.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay. $45,000 or $90,000 for married. It's $45,000 for singles.
Okay.
$90,000
for married. Okay.
That's at the
husband and wife both working. They get $24,000 standard.
Right.
Then they pay tax above that up to whatever.
Well, up to 45, it's 12%. Above that is 25% till you get to 90,000. And then the $35,000 kicks in at $260,000 for married.
35%?
35%. Anything
kicks
over
kicks in
at $260,000 for married couples.
So it breaks 90 to 25, and then it goes up to?
Goes to 260.
260, it goes to?
35.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So,
currently, that's about 28, so that's an increase.
Yeah, it could be. That's what I
mean.
Way
to go, Mike.
Play with the rates.
Not that Mike hasn't seen tax statements every day of his life, right?
You're right. You analyze it, and we haven't truly digested all of this. But my gut in reading what I'm reading is that there's gives and takes all over the place. And in the end, you're going to get a small break, but it's not as big as you think unless you go up the chain. If you're up in the upper brackets, yes, theoretically, you could be saving some money. Because the 35% bracket takes you all the way up. At 260, you go to 35. After that, it's $1 million before you get
the next break. Bracket.
Yeah, the next break's $1 million.
And then what's it go to, 39?
It goes to 39.6.
Yeah. Well, And there was another one you were telling me about earlier. Today, your primary residence, you have to live in it 2 out of the last 5 years to call it a primary residence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now it's going to go to what?
It's going to go to 5 out of 8 years. So you must live in the house for 5 out of 8 years in order to qualify for the exclusion.
But that has to do with capital gains on the sale of the house.
That's correct.
Well, there, and also, if you don't live there 5 out of the last 8, you now have a total taxable consequence, like a rental property, all the way back to your cost basis minus depreciation, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's your primary residence, today you can make husband
and
wife.
Well, it's up to husband and wife can exclude up to $500,000.
$500,000. No
if
tax.
They're there 2 out of 5 years. The same $500,000 is going to apply, but you got to be there five out of the eight.
That's
so they don't want people just every 2 years selling out and then playing that game, moving it to something else. So they want you to be a rather long-term resident.
Well, I don't know that that's good, bad, or indifferent, but bottom line is it sounds more equitable, people that are flipping a house every couple of years and not paying tax on it.
Well, I think the national average is between 7 and 10 years someone stays in a house.
If you did it on purpose and you bought a house and lived in it for 2 or 3 years and sold it, and if you were good at renovating, people do mm-hmm. that, then you have no tax on the gain.
Right.
Right.
So exactly. Now you've got to do it. 3 out of 8.
There's no relief on the Obamacare taxes. You still got the 3.8% still there on investment income if you're making over $250,000 jointly. You're still going to have that kicking in. You still have the penalty for not having health insurance. That's still there. So that's where we're at right now. It's significant. There'll be more coming. I'll talk about it more as we go.
Every week.
Because it changes and the interpretations are changing. And, for example, the pass-throughs. Everybody got excited about the pass-throughs. If you're an S-Corp
and
the income you make on that pass-through gets capped at 25%, that's great, except for they built in exclusions in there. They're excluding professional services.
No professional services.
No professional
services.
I need
to get a real job, Mike.
I have a very interesting chart here that compares the current tax rates with the proposed tax rates. The old tax rate, or the current rate, from 0 to 19,000, the bracket was 10%, and from 19,000 to 77,000, it was 15%. Under the new tax rate, as Vince pointed out, the bracket will be 12%, from 0 to 90,000, so there will be a benefit under the new tax rate for most people. Then the next bracket,
however,
Yeah.
A lot of deductions are subtracted, getting taken away.
I'm just giving you the wrong number.
Your benefit on rate, but the rate is only one piece of that equation.
Under the old system, 25% was the next level, and that went from 77,000 to 238,000. Under the new plan, the 25% bracket would go from 90,000 to 260,000. So another slight benefit. Then the next bracket was 35%. Under the old system, 238,000 to 480,000. Under the proposed new system, 260,000 to 1,000,000.
The final
bracket would be was 39.6. That was anything greater than 480,000. Under the new plan, the 39.6 bracket would stay on anything over $1 million.
Well, see, under this, the present law, if you make over 450, you're hitting that 39.6% bracket. Yeah. Where now you could go up to $1 million. Well,
now that's what they're saying. The extreme.
That's why it's really not middle class tax break. That's more upper income tax.
Yeah. Well, there's where the Democrats are a bit upset about that. That is, they you keep hearing them say that. Hey, you know, there's been no definition that you can read that you can trust. And like anything we see on the tube or on in the newspaper, you know, how do you know for sure? But you, my man, Vince, will come in every week as they modify, if this thing gets passed at all.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions there, because I think the most controversy has to do with the mortgage interest deduction.
Right.
Only up to $500,000 of mortgage, you can take that, so it's capped. The other thing is state, and we don't have this here, so it doesn't apply to Floridians.
Yeah, but how about sales tax, though?
Well, they may take away, and probably will take away the sale. That is, all exemptions are going away. I mean, deductions are going away.
Right.
So forget it, the sales tax deduction will be gone.
And also your real estate taxes, which is also...
No, real estate taxes are getting capped at 10 grand.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine from 95% of the people in Florida, but when you start getting up to New York and California,
those are the states that are going to get hit.
And really, I mean, states like Florida, where we have no state income tax and relatively low real estate taxes, we are subsidizing states like New York, New Jersey, California, Connecticut.
Well, they try to level the playing field with the sales tax, but in no way does it
not level
the playing field.
No.
Because you got people up in the Northeast that might be paying on average $15,000 a year in property tax,
right?
Which they can deduct,
but not if they're going to cap it at 10. You think is that?
They'll cap it at 10 grand. Also, state and local taxes. So for people who pay the state tax,
now
the Fed allows you to deduct.
California's 13%.
Exactly, 13% in California.
If they eliminate those,
and most people in Florida have to realize that if they do pass this the way it is. I mean, this is a huge benefit for real estate in Florida,
absolutely.
Because imagine what those people are going to do. They're going to pack up, leave New York, and come down here to Florida.
If they can. Most of the people that I talk to up there are there because they got family. There's a lot of reasons. Their jobs are there. So,
but if they get retired, which is the norm, they can't afford to live there
anymore.
Yeah.
Retirees are different. But then they can go to Arizona.
Well, I mean, there's a certain amount of people who are on the fence, you know, and that could sway them.
Maybe.
Yes.
It might kick
him early
retirement.
I know a CPA that came down and he's not retired.
Yeah, 12 years ago, yeah.
See, it happens.
Somebody.
Well, a lot of people like the concept of a value-added tax or a flat tax, and I just don't understand why the politicians are so against that, because either one seems to be a benefit for most people.
I'll give you the obvious answer, is that they're involved themselves in a lot of complex tax deals and taking advantage of loopholes.
Tax attorneys
don't
like that.
And they don't want to go with flax. Plus, you got a huge lobby with the tax attorneys and with the CPAs.
All accounting firms. Yeah.
They're never going to, by my opinion,
they won't. Hey, listen, stranger things have happened. The fact that Obama got Obamacare passed was a miracle. Every president's tried to get health insurance done. Not that we like the system, but I'm just saying, it was very impressive
A lot of people, they benefited from it.
Yeah.
But it comes down to cost and who's paying for it.
Taxpayer subsidies, nothing new again. You know, deficit spending, that becomes our problem. But we digress. 1-888-221-8990. 888-221-8990. So what's that? mutual fund, Pastor Dave. This is our in-house joke, folks, because he really did a great job at describing it.
Well, you're the one that gave me the pizza analogy,
right?
And I love pizza, so it was just a matter of putting it together.
And they're making me hungry already.
And you know what happens with a mutual fund pizza? The slices don't have to be equal.
No, they don't.
You can take any size off you want.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
But there is one difference, though, because the pizza usually is quantifiable and it's a certain size. The
right.
pool of dollars in these funds can grow.
Sure. Yes, they can. But they still will slice off a portion of that. As the pie grows, they still slice off portions of it, no matter what. How much time do we have here?
We have roughly 8 minutes.
Yeah, I was gonna just talk about one of the negatives of. I listen to commercials, and you know, everybody in the world, when you see a commercial on the tube or an article in a paper, everybody's self-serving. Nobody is without an agenda. A mutual fund simply means, as Pastor Dave was saying, it's a great big pie, and you get a slice of that pie, and then you get to own fractionally all of the companies that are in there, and the manager makes a fee. Okay, what are the negatives of the mutual fund? Well, one, the manager makes a fee. That's it. Now, that can be as low as sometimes a quarter of a point and as high as 5% that you never see that comes out of there on a daily basis. Divide that pie in roughly 365 days, even though the market's not open every day, but it's use a calendar year. And the second part of it is that you can buy a mutual fund, let's say in November, for let's say $100,000, use that number, and comes January, your value goes down to $90,000 because the market goes down, and you might still have a taxable consequence.
Yes.
Because the mutual fund company sold some of the shares, the stock that's involved in that pie, that they bought 10 and 20 years ago, so they made a profit even though you didn't, and you now are stuck with a taxable consequence. That's most people consider that very unfair, and I don't think anybody that I've ever talked to has ever been explained that they have that potential consequence.
That's classic phantom income, Joe. This is where they tell you earn X dollars in dividends,
yeah,
and because they have to pass through the dividend income to you, and but you never saw any cash.
Nope.
So you got this on your tax return. You got to pay income taxes. Yep. On the only way to get money for that.
But it's also
sell out the fund and get the money.
The actual sale of shares of stock. They paid 10, they sold it for 100, you paid it, bought it for 110, you took a $10 loss, and you have a $90 tax consequence because they paid 10 for it, and everybody's shares in the pie. Now, there's ways to get around it. They're called ETFs, exchange-traded funds. This is something else people need to look at and get educated on, and we're not going to go into the long detail, but basically, quickly, an exchange-traded fund looks like the same pizza. The difference is, you stand by alone, you're not mixed in with the rest of the people in that pie. So exchange traded funds are making a big mark in a lot of different vehicles.
Well, another good thing about ETFs, Joe, is you could get more diversification. I think you can buy globally. You can have these ETFs, you can buy in foreign countries.
Well, you can get the same mutual funds, literally the same.
You can buy an international fund, but these are more targeted, I think.
Well, these ETFs. The key thing with them is the tax consequences are superior. No doubt. And they're 100% liquid at any time of day, which is two major facts that you don't have with a mutual fund. The third thing, and I talk about this regularly, and I've had a number of people that are scared to death that the market is so hot that they're going to lose their money. You know, because what goes up must come down. It can't go up forever and ever. At some point, something will happen, and the market will, quote, adjust or correct. And the older you are, the more that fear comes in. You take a person in their 70s, they're going to think different than a person in their 40s or 50s. So the key thing is this: if you get an insured investment, they have protection in there that gives you insurance to protect that investment under certain circumstances. This is something that people need to know about and do some exploring. So we don't have a lot of time to go into that stuff, but I just want to share some thoughts that people should think about. And if they have questions, you dial 1-888-221-8990. You can talk to Pastor Tom, Pastor Dave anytime. Give your name and number, and we'll call you back, and we'll answer any questions you've got. 1-888-221-8990. Hey, Mike. Of course, you know, we hear all this propaganda on the radio and TV about no closing costs. We pay everything. You pay nothing. We take nothing. It doesn't come out of your money, right?
No, you pay for it one form or another. Usually they bury it in the interest rate.
There you go. And, you know, they've never actually said that ever one time. Have you ever noticed that?
No. And you know, everyone understands, most people understand the concept of points.
Right.
You can pay points to get a lower interest rate. It's just nothing but prepaid interest,
right,
which are also tax deductible the year you pay them. But most people don't realize that the opposite can occur. You can take a higher interest rate and the bank can pay you points, which then you can use to pay your closing costs. And that's pretty much what they're doing in that kind of situation.
Exactly.
So you're paying over the long term by taking a higher interest rate.
Literally, there's no free lunches in this world, folks, is what we're trying to say. Of course, unless you're a politician, and then we know they get free lunches. Or attorneys. Wait a minute. Excuse me, Alan. You get free lunches, and no, you're not practicing attorney anymore. I had to pick on Alan a little bit because he was nodding off. I'm putting him to sleep here today.
No, you're not.
No, I'm not.
He just always looks relaxed.
Very interesting show. We covered a lot of good information today. Hopefully, what we're talking about as far as taxes and interest rates and helping people come to fruition. It's up to Congress now to really give us a good bill.
Yeah, there's one other point I want to make also, Joe. Big item. Alimony would no longer be deductible under the new law.
Wow.
But I still have a question as to whether that means that the recipient no longer has taxable income either. Because, there's a quid pro quo.
Yeah, right.
You get
the
deduction
right.
If you're the payer, and you get the income if you're the payee.
So, I think the highlight of the show was when that guy called in and said,
do I get my girlfriend?
No, more important than that was, oh, she's beautiful. She's beautiful.
She's a queen.
She doesn't do anything. I take care of her. Wait a minute. If you talk to him tomorrow and he's got a notch in the back of his head, yeah, or he's in the hospital.
Well, maybe he doesn't call because he's unconscious. She hit him in the head.
You know, we're laughing, but that I think is coming down the road. There are going to be many people who are going to bring into their house somebody who's not working but is going to care for them rather than having them go to an assisted living facility.
It's called grandma.
Well, usually
she's not young or pretty like this guy, but usually it's grandma.
Well, you know, as you think about it, under the new law, they're doing away with the personal exemption, so it really doesn't matter if you have dependents.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. It's good only this year.
He could not get 24,000. Yes, he could, because that's the tops, but he has to have one more dependent other than him. Right. Yeah. Well, hey, listen, the tax code is not passed yet.
And by the way, it's only married filing jointly that gets the
that wouldn't apply to him. He'll only get 12 grand,
so he'd get the 12, and whether she's dependent or not wouldn't matter under the new law.
Now what about if you had three children at home by yourself, a single person with three children,
you get a child credit. But the exemptions go away.
But a child credit is better than an exemption.
Oh, it is. It's worth more.
Yeah.
The exemption, the deduction, if you will, is only worth whatever your bracket is.
Exactly.
Where a credit's dollar for dollar off the tax.
Yeah.
It's going from 1,600 is going up to now it's at 1,000.
Mm-hmm. You know, besides the fact she's beautiful, he may have to get married for 12 grand.
He won't have to get married. Is it worth it?
Is it worth 12 grand?
Yes, of course it's worth it.
Listen, we want to thank you so much for calling in, and thank you for letting us pick on you, and understand she's beautiful. Good for you. And until next week, Vince will call you tomorrow. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Team MarTech program. The Team MarTech program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF MarTech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team MarTech program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team MarTech is available at 772-678-7725.
Thank you.